Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, they're ugly, painful, and develop later in life. Most of us have heard of the debilitating medical condition known as shingles. But what exactly is it? And who's at highest risk of getting it? An infectious disease expert from the Mayo Clinic explains.
But first, your husband is everything a woman could want in a life partner. He cooks, vacuums, and loads the dishwasher. He does laundry, folds clothes, changes diapers, and puts the kids to bed. The two of you have what psychologists call a peer marriage, an egalitarian partnership, and you genuinely enjoy each other's company. Now, about your sex life, how's that working for you?
That may seem like a nosy or intrusive question, but your answer may reveal an unexpected outcome of modern marriage. Writer and psychotherapist Lori Gottlieb explored this issue in the recent New York Times article, "Does a More Equal Marriage Mean Less Sex?" The piece triggered a national debate on why peer marriages seem to have lost that sexual spark. Author of the New York Times bestseller, "Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Goodenough," and three other books, Lori Gottlieb is also a contributing editor for The Atlantic. She joins us from Los Angeles. Hi, Lori. Welcome to Take Care, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, my pleasure.
Your article cites a study which found that men who did what the researchers characterize as feminine chores, like folding laundry or cooking, had less sex per month than those whose husbands did what were considered the more masculine chores, like taking out the trash or fixing the car. Tell us about the results of that study.
Right. So what that study showed is that when men did more masculine types of chores, things like taking out the trash, fixing the car, as opposed to doing only feminine chores, such as doing the laundry, cooking, emptying the dishwasher, those couples had sex more frequently than the couples in which the men did the more feminine chores. However, it wasn't just the frequency. It turns out that the women reported higher sexual satisfaction in those couples as well.
Higher sexual satisfaction. That was the thing we were wondering about, because, you know, we were rationalizing, well, maybe they didn't have sex as much, but it was really, really good sex. When we talk about sexual satisfaction, I guess the question is, what's the scale? I mean, there's a difference between tenderness and dominance. I mean, I'm not going to go into all that, but did you have any sense of the measure? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, before I even get to that, I should say one thing. If the men did no chores, they were having the least amount of sex. So let's clarify that up top.
All right.
They were sleeping
for
in
any men listening.
They were sleeping in another room entirely, right?
Exactly. And they were getting icy stares across the dinner table. So it wasn't about not doing any chores. And you know, when we look at these kinds of studies, you're right. We have to look at, well, what does that mean, sexual satisfaction, and how are these things measured? And these are subject to all kinds of biases. There's reporting bias. What was the mood of the subject at the time when he or she answered the survey? You know, how do we collect the data, all of those kinds of things. But I think that why I cited that in the New York Times piece was I really thought it was interesting because it kind of dovetailed with a lot of things that I see in my practice and then the other kinds of studies that I was citing in the piece as well. So there's all this information out there that seemed to indicate that sameness, and that's different from equality, so sameness seems to decrease people's sexual desire for each other.
And sameness also, I don't think, correlates exactly to that men do the chores. It means that the couple has a lot in common instead of maybe opposites attracting, as we are familiar with that idea. They have similar values, similar opinions on raising the kids, and are both hands-on, right, in all of those
That's
aspects.
Right.
Is that what you mean by sameness?
Well, that's right. I think that we marry our clones almost. And in some ways, it's really nice to have somebody who's very similar to yourself. Now we really look for somebody. It's extremely important for most couples. And in fact, there's a survey where people were asked, do you want to be in this kind of marriage? And the majority of people under 30 in this country said, yes, this is the kind of marriage I want to be in. So people want to be with someone who's very similar in terms of background, intellect, in terms of sharing the chores, in terms of sharing the breadwinning, sharing the child raising if you're going to have kids. Those are the kinds of things that we want. And yet we've become so similar that there's not a lot of maybe gender differentiation in the way that we culturally define gender. So when we're that similar, it seems like there's less kind of heat going on. And so how do we create, not that we want to give that up, but how do we create difference in marriages where the couples tend to be very, very much like each other?
So to be clear, when we talk about this, we're talking about it's not really the act of unloading the dishwasher or folding the laundry. It's not the behavior, but it's the personality and psychic makeup of the type of man that does this that we find less sexual heat with?
Well, one of the researchers that I spoke to said that she thinks that it's attributable to something called sexual scripts, which is the way that we define what is masculine and what is feminine in our culture. And for example, if a man sees a woman who's extremely quote unquote masculine in the ways that our culture defines masculinity, then he's probably not, you know, and again, this is sort of the middle of the bell curve, so there are going to be outliers on either side, but he will probably be less attracted to that sort of woman than a woman who is projecting some kind of feminine vibe. Likewise, if a man seems very feminine to a woman, again, how do we define femininity culturally? Most women are going to be less attracted to that man than if he is projecting some kind of masculine vibe. And so that translates into the way we're running our household as well.
How does this compare to marriages in the 50s? And were they doing these kind? I know Masters and Johnsons were doing their own things, but were they doing surveys like this? How do we know the
right
frequency and satisfaction of a majority of American couples in the 50s? What are we comparing this to?
Right. So in the 50s, when they were doing those other kinds of studies, often the way that they would collect the data is that they would go into people's homes and take one spouse while the other spouse is in the other room and can probably hear, and say, how often do you, and you know, I can name all these sex acts that I can't name on radio, and then they would have to answer these questions. But it was really, you know, partly men like to kind of increase the certain numbers of behaviors that they were doing. There was some reporting that maybe wasn't so accurate. And women, because of the shame around sexuality, would probably underreport. And then there was also the issue of maybe your spouse was listening and maybe you didn't want them to hear some of these things. So the methodology is a little bit different today. But the other issue is we're not saying sex is worse than it was in the 50s. Every sexual era has its own challenges because married sex is married sex. So, you know, long-term monogamy is not an aphrodisiac in general. There are ways that you're going to have to work at keeping that exciting, no matter what era you're in. But what they are comparing it to is when they looked at, say, couples today who have a more traditional division of labor and a more traditional type of marriage, those couples were reporting more frequent sex and higher satisfaction than the couples where the man was doing more feminine types of chores.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And we're speaking with writer and psychotherapist Lori Gottlieb about her article, Does a More Equal Marriage Mean Less Sex? It recently appeared in the New York Times. Now, Lorraine asked about, you know, how does this compare to marriages in the 50s? And I want to ask, how does sexual satisfaction compare? Because there are so many different, I mean, society has changed quite a bit. There's a lot more pressure to perform and to perform at a higher level. I mean, we have commercials for Cialis and Viagra. There's easily accessible porn and movies and television. They're all much racier. So does that change our expectation and measure of what sexual satisfaction is?
Well, absolutely. So women now in these peer marriages are coming into the marriage with a lot more knowledge of what is exciting to them, and they have a lot more sexual experience. It isn't like on the wedding night they're learning what sex is. So they have certain expectations that they come into the marriage with. You know, men have certain expectations possibly based on porn and, you know, other media influences. And women have expectations based on media influences as well. So a lot of people are expecting, well, look, we have these marriages where we can have it all. We can share the chores and the childcare, and we can, you know, have the careers that we want, and we can have the kids that we want, and we can do all these kinds of things. And a lot of people are expecting that part of having it all is that your sex life is going to be at a certain level. And the reality is, when you're in marriage and you're exhausted and you're doing the things that you're doing, you know, the sex life might not live up to those expectations. And then people become dissatisfied and they think that something's wrong when really nothing's wrong. They just aren't really accepting, well, this is there are limitations on what sex might look like. That isn't to say that you can't kind of spice it up, but just that the everydayness of it is not going to match perhaps what our expectations are of what our romantic and sexual connection is going to be in our marriage. And not only that, what we expect from each other, and particularly we expect one person to be kind of like our co-manager in the household, our best friend, our intimate confidant, our passionate lover, and the person who's going to kind of read our minds and know that we want this done at this time. That's just not reality. One person can't be all of that. Whereas in the past, if you're going to compare to the 50s, people kind of knew that you were going to get some needs met from your friends, some needs met from your community. It wasn't going to be this one person is going to be end-all be-all for all of those needs.
Well, I think it's very helpful for all of us that you're pointing out that it's not realistic for a married couple, especially over so many years. I mean, we're living longer, and those of us married are staying together longer, for those who do stay together. And it's hard to have a steamy sex life for their whole lives. And you also mentioned that you're seeing some of this, you know, in the couples and the people that you talk to in your private practice. So what is the take home from all this research? Should we be doing something differently?
Well, there are a few things. I mean, part of it is that I think we need to really examine what is the purpose of marriage. So marriage is a nice kind of icing on the cake, but it's not going to fulfill people in all these different areas 100% of the ways that they want to be fulfilled. So instead of getting disappointed that that isn't happening, to really look at, well, what are the things I'm getting in my marriage? So that's number one. You will feel a lot more sexual desire for your spouse if you're appreciating your spouse as opposed to feeling all the ways in which he or she is coming up short. And then I think also it's really to look at how do we talk about sex in our marriages with our partners. We'll talk about almost anything. And when we do talk about sex, it's kind of like, you know, do we put X into slot Y, as opposed to, you know, what are the ways that we can, like, what are the different positions we can use? And it's not really about that kind of variety. That kind of variety is easy. People can figure that out. It's really about what's happening between you as a couple. Are you separating out all of that domestic sphere when you're actually having, you know, this intimate time with each other? Can you separate that out? Can you be adults separate from your children? How do you separate that out? People's lives are so blurred because of the sameness, because of everything that they're doing together, that they don't really have a separate sphere for this aspect of their lives. And it's really important that they do. And I think they're going to see an improvement in their sex life if they can separate that out.
Lori Gottlieb is a psychotherapist in Los Angeles. Her article in the New York Times, "Does a More Equal Marriage Mean Less Sex?" has sparked quite a national debate, and it's just been a pleasure talking to you about this.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
For more information on peer marriages and Lori Gottlieb's article, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, what's red, spreads across the skin, and hurts like you wouldn't believe? We take a look at shingles with an expert from the Mayo Clinic. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.